welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, that is John Rauhouse playing in the background. You are about to hear a conversation that happened a couple of months ago between myself and Richard Smith. Richard is one of the greatest guitarists alive today. He is also what is affectionately termed a road dog. He is often on the road. His schedule is kind of dizzying if you ever look at it on his website, richardsmithmusic.com. He is zigzagging around the country, and he was zigzagging through Washington State a couple of months ago, and we had this conversation. This is what happens when two guitarists who are just hanging out, drinking coffee, talk. It's not a interview about their string gauges or their new record or their gear. It's a conversation about staying sane and running a small business and what keeps the fire going inside of you. This is a loose conversation. Richard is an incredible player and an incredible human being. I hope you enjoy it. And I don't know why, but I sat on this interview for a couple months and then I realized I got to get this out into the world. So I hope you enjoy it. Let me know if you do. podcast@fretboardjournal.com. Richard's got a fascinating story. I love that the Fretboard Journal is around to capture the actual personality of all of these players. I love that we've built up this database of 500 plus audio interviews over the course of the Fretboard Journal podcast history and the truth about vintage amps. And now we've got this new podcast for steel guitar players called Steel, and we've got Luthier and Luthier. We do all of this. It's free. It will live forever. And if you want to support the podcast in a big way, I have created a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/fretboard_journal. I'll include a link to that in the show notes. It is a great way to show your support for all that I do. It is not easy putting out all of these podcasts, putting out all these interviews on our website, putting out the magazine itself. I know a lot of you out there love this podcast. It's an important part of your week. If you want to help give back, help me support my family, help me grow this little company even further, there's various tiers where you can give back. And I promise in return, you're going to get a bunch of cool content you've never seen anywhere else. You're going to get access to new Fretboard Journal podcasts ad-free. I know some of you will like that. As it grows, we're going to have some podcast-only virtual happy hours. I'm probably going to be sharing a bunch of behind-the-scenes summit content and who knows what else. So I hope you will support us. I hate selling ads, I'll be honest. Aside from the dozen or so brands that I truly believe in and I know the people behind them, I hate selling brands. I don't want to be inauthentic and just pitch you on stuff that you don't care about. So joining our Patreon is a great way to keep the ads at bay. Speaking of which, here are a couple of brands that I do actually love. Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar, based here in Seattle, one of the coolest vintage instrument stores you will ever step foot in. Go to mmguitarbar.com to see their entire lineup. It's incredible. We are also brought to you by Peghead Nation. You can use the promo code Fretboard when you go to Peghead Nation and you will get your first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription. Peghead Nation has some of the coolest music instruction around. If you want to up your game, and this is what we're talking about with Richard Smith today, you'll want to join Peghead Nation. We are also brought to you by our friends at String Joy Strings. You can get 10% off of your order with the code Fretboard when you check out. They now have mandolin strings, folks, so check those out, as well as their acoustic and electric guitar strings. We're also brought to you by iZotope. That Fret 10 will get you 10% off of iZotope software if you ever need it. I've been hammering you all to come to our Fretboard Summit, our big guitar gathering in Chicago, August 24th to 26th, and you've all listened. We've sold out of all access tickets that get you into that Tommy Emmanuel show and the Jorma Kekkonen show and the Jeff Parker show and all the cool lectures and workshops, but we do still have tickets available for the Luthery show. So if you know anyone who collects handmade boutique guitars from the modern makers, they're gonna want to come to this show. It's the largest handmade guitar show that the Midwest has, I think, ever seen. We have around 60 great brands and luthiers exhibiting, including some bigger brands like Martin and Huss and Dalton and Preston Thompson and Collings and Yamaha. It's a great way to meet the makers behind these guitars, try out some new products that you're not going to find anywhere else, And I believe tickets are just $25 a day for that Luthery showcase. So if you have any friends in the greater Chicago area or a couple hours away, or you want to hop on a plane and go guitar shopping, come to the Fretboard Summit, meet all these people, see what all the fuss is about. I mean, I know I'm going to see a bunch of Fretboard Journal podcast listeners at the summit. Those are my plugs. Again, this is a informal, loose conversation with Richard Smith, one of the coolest people around. While he wasn't driving his car around the country, he stopped here, and it's a fun one. I hope you enjoy it.
Are we rolling and rambling?
We are.
All right. Well, I'm here in Seattle. I've got like an hour before the parking warden is in trouble with me.
Okay. We'll cover as much. So we've spent the last hour talking about the ebbs and flows of being a touring musician and a magazine publisher and just the state of affairs. Yeah. And I figured it was time to turn the recorder on.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
You have the wildest tour schedule. Is it mostly house concerts? Is it a mix?
It's a mix of everything, really. It's a lot of house concerts, small theaters, the odd festival. Yeah, quite a few house concerts. Concert series that are put on by, like I played for the Windlock Pickers Association down there, just right near St. Helens.
Yeah.
Just off of I-5, south of Olympia. I play for Tim Johnson, my friend, Tim and Tina Johnson, Lord of the Strings concert series down in San Clemente. They're based. There's a few of those kind of associations, you know. It's always great for the instrumentalists to do that because, you know, we need people like that to promote us to their, you know, to their following, which is great. But there's, yeah, house concerts and concert associations. You know, you kind of dig and grind.
Yeah.
And it's very different. You know, it's a grassroots thing. So you see, you know, who's gigging, who's working where. So my life is spent kind of looking at my calendar. Okay, where's it looking pretty bare? Where haven't I been for a year? Mm-hmm. Where should I go to?
Yeah.
Who do I know? Looking at the map. Okay, how long does it take to get from here to here? Okay, 2.5 hours, easy. 5 hours, 6 hours. All right, that's doable in a day to get there as a touring musician. I can do that in 6 hours. 8 hours, I've done that before. I'd much rather not, and usually I don't anymore. Like do 8 hours and then do a gig. But if it's a really good gig and it's the decision between doing the gig or not, and it being a good gig, I will drive 8 hours in a day and do a gig. But I think it's been a very long time since I've done that. But I've done that before. And it's not, you know, you can't really give your best after 8 hours. Or at least, you know, you need plenty of coffee. That's what I got this morning. I'm going to keep rambling, Jason. the caffeine keeps me talking.
I mean, generally speaking, do the house concerts, which sort of have their own built-in audience,
yeah,
are they more consistently lucrative or profitable than playing at a cafe where they may or may not have promoted it all that well?
Yeah,
or?
That depends on the promoter.
Yeah,
generally they're good. They've got a regular following. So you've got a house concert. And so the people have got their own following. They've got maybe 100, 200, 1,000, who knows how many people they've got on their mailing list. Mm-hmm. And usually everyone who's been there has been built up over years. They've done house concerts. So, and everything they've been to, they basically trust the promoter as a guy who will bring in an act that they but it's going to be of a certain quality or that they think they're going to enjoy. So they're always, they're usually very good. They're usually a good gig. You can rely on them. And I, you know, you just kind of build those up over time. My goal is to be able to do 365 concerts a year and then not do that. But it's about basically being able to fill the calendar and work as much as you want to because it's trying to be logistic, getting your logistics down. You don't want to be going driving 4 hours a day up here and down there. You want to hit an area.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I'm up here now is to I had a Northwest circuit, and it was a couple of the promoters kind of shut down or stopped doing it, or a couple of the venues closed, and then the pandemic happened.
Yep.
So I was kind of back to square one almost. I knew a few people. So I've come up here. I think I've got maybe 5 gigs this time. I've driven up from Northern California, beautiful drive past Shasta.
Yeah.
Shasta, I mean, it's fantastic. And all the way up, I missed Eugene. I didn't do that this time. I'll probably do that the next time.
Okay.
But basically came up in order to kind of start another circuit and make some connections. And now I'll probably be back in about a year's time. I've got about 10 or a dozen people I'll call for all the way out here to Spokane. And I've got some potential Montana dates. And so you kind of look at your calendar, you look at the map, and you figure, okay, what can I do? And how much time do I want to spend away from home? Which has been crazy the last 2 years. And because I've been, since COVID, I have, I was home for 10 weeks last year, and that will probably be about the same this year, I would imagine. So I'm just kind of hammering it and reestablishing connections and a touring circuit. And it's great. I get to see a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just talking, Jason.
No, keep talking.
I'm just hammering it.
You mentioned during the pandemic when a lot of venues shut down, you mentioned that you took it upon yourself, not for money, but for, to keep your chops up, your performance chops up. You just took up residency kind of at a local place. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I have a... You know, I mean, I would noodle at home. You know, you blow over changes. You're playing your licks. You might work on a new lick, or you play something, play scales with a metronome just to keep the strength of your fingers up. But if you're playing repertoire, like it might be a Bach piece or a Joplin rag or a Jerry Reed tune or whatever it might be, you don't necessarily play those tunes every day. And some of them you kind of need to play to keep them up. But once you've learned them and you perform them, you're not going to sit and play your show every day in your house to nobody,
sure,
or you know, to your wife or your dogs or or your kids or whatever. You're not going to do that. You're going to practice. It's not like you're not going to pick up the guitar. You're going to play, but you're not going to play stuff that you necessarily perform. And I thought, well, the rust spots will appear in places that you don't expect them to, stuff that you think you've got nailed. If you haven't done it for a month or 6 months or whatever, that stuff is not going to be there. So I knew I needed to be in shape for when I was getting gigs again. So I went to a local cafe. I just said, would you mind if I sat in the corner here and played for you guys?
Yeah.
And they said, no, it'd be great. That's fine. Come on in. I said, I mean, no particular day of the week. I might be here for 2 or 3 days a week. I might be here every day or just whenever it's convenient. So I would do that. I would show up maybe 10 o'clock or noon or whatever and just play for a couple of hours, repertoire, one song after another for a couple of hours. That way I know that even if there's just one guy eating a sandwich in a corner, I'm accountable to him. I can't stop and noodle. I can't stop. I can't get to a weak spot in a song and think, oh, yeah, how does this go? I can't remember that. And then stop and practice. I can't do that because then you're not inspired to play all the way through. That guy, I'm accountable to him. So I have to be in performance mode, as it were, so that I am so that I'm playing, having that goal. And then I make a mental note of where I think the rust spots might start creeping in, where the weak spots are, where I think I may have faltered on a couple of bars or whatever. You make a mental note, then you do your practice on that with the metronome at home. So that was the idea of that, is to stay in shape and have someone to be accountable to. Even if that person's not listening, they may just be eating a sandwich or drinking a coffee, or you might, even at some point, they may have no customers in, and now you're just... You know, you're working for the staff. You're just playing there. But at least in your mind, you're in performance mode rather than watching a movie at home and in noodling mode where you're not really maintaining anything. Or it just puts you in a performance mode and a goal mode so that you have something to work towards or something to maintain.
Yeah.
You're held accountable. You're holding yourself accountable to somebody.
That's a brilliant way to ride out the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was, I knew I needed to play. I mean, it's not like I wasn't playing, but I thought, I'm not going to play my repertoire. Once you've played it, once you've learned a tune or whatever it is, once you've learned a bunch and you performed it a few times, you're not going to, you don't really play that at home, or at least I don't. I might run the tough bits or run the bits that I think are going to give me problems. So sometimes that happens, like the bits that you've worked on are great and they may be the what you think are the hardest bits. Then you get to an easy bit and you've forgotten it for some reason because you've neglected it.
Yeah.
So that happens.
Well, speaking of repertoire, I just broke the news to you a little while ago. David Schmidt, in our new issue of Fretboard Journal 52, the one that's mailing now, did a piece on learning the entertainer, and you had a big part in that. In that he downloaded you've got
that's
what
great.
a dozen.
I had no idea. Until
how many
I
tunes
came here.
Do you have where you can download the video and the.
I've got
tab.
A few. Well, yeah. that was another pandemic thing. I'm thinking, Well, what am I going to do? I need to do more of that.
Yeah.
But I've got, maybe a dozen tunes, something like that, where I did a video and a tab.
Yeah.
So you download the video and the tab. And the most popular been the 40 thumb picking exercises. That's been popular. People with their Travis picking thumb that doesn't quite work. I've got exercises for that.
Yeah.
That people can download the tab and the exercise and, just build their coordination, basically right-hand coordination techniques, and the entertainers. Those are the two most popular. And the entertainer, of course, it was, 2018, I think that video is.
Okay.
Where I'm in the room with Tommy, and that was at the Chet Atkins
festival.
But yeah.
So he got this and made it his project for the last many years to just try to learn the tune, like, front to back, and it's a great piece. But I'm kind of curious, when people think of you, they think of the music of Chet Atkins and Merle Travis and Jerry Reed. But what tunes are you working on right now? What are you thinking about adding to your repertoire?
I'm going in too many. I mean, look, I'm a finger picker that kind of gets out of my lane every now and then. I mean, I love hanging with the bluegrass guys, gypsy jazz guys. I love Joe Pass. So really, for me, it's about learning the fretboard, learning, I want to be able to just pick a standard and just play like a chord melody thing or a walking bass and improvise, just knowing the fretboard better.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a tune, but just pick a standard and just play a version of it that would pass for performance, but do it on the fly, which I can do to a point. And I've done that before, but I just want more ideas and be able to do it better.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm working on. Not necessarily a tune, I don't think. There may be something. I mean, every now and then I'll work on an arrangement and just something that I can just play that's going to be the same every time. And then there's going to be maybe a standard. I think, well, here's various ways I can do that. And then when I'm doing it in performance, it's a little bit more free and a little bit more improvised.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm working on, is just cleaning up my act, cleaning up. I'm actually working on the other thing I'm working on is getting enough work.
Yeah. I was going to ask that because
booking gigs.
You have a recording studio in Nashville and a video studio now. I mean, you've pivoted a little bit and do that.
You were
on the road a lot.
That's what I've been doing the last 2 years. I mean, the pandemic, I was at home a lot, so we kind of converted the recording studio into a video studio. Of course, David Greer Band. David and, Dave's incredible, one of my favorite players. The great Stuart Duncan playing fiddle mostly.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't Stuart, it was Shad Cobb, one or two other people. Shad's a fantastic fiddle player. Stuart was doing most of those. Dennis Crouch was playing bass. Corey Walker, fantastic banjo player, does a lot of studio work. He's with the East Nash Grass. That's his band.
Yeah.
He was playing mostly banjo. It was pretty much him every time. And Casey Campbell, wonderful mandolin player. He's kind of bridges the gap between old and new school. You can hear some Bill Monroe. You can hear some Sam Bush. You can hear a bit of everybody. He's got his own. Yeah, he's great, great mandolin player, great groove, and great ideas. It was a fun band to have come in every Tuesday. So that's why we turned the recording studio into a TV studio. We got the ATEM Mini Pro.
Yep.
You know, the Blackmagic. So many people. I mean, that was just such a great piece of equipment.
Yeah.
So no editing anymore.
We were talking about that.
Video editing.
Nice that must be.
I mean, there's a lot of musicians out there who are having to wear a lot of hats, and being a video editor is one of those time-consuming things. It's like, yeah, I've got a product I like, but it took way more time than I wanted it. If you can get a couple of cameras, even two, just so that you've got, and if you've got a cameraman, if you've got one person holding the camera, then you can get all, you got your one safe wide shot, and you got the other multiple angles, if someone's moving around. But we were lucky enough to get four cameras in the studio, and so four cameras, and one of them sometimes would zoom in and out, so you got, it looks a little bit more like a TV show than one guy with a cell phone kind of thing. That was the idea, is that, these performances are decent production and good sound. And instead of it looking like a recording studio, we hung the red curtains and put the standard theater performance mat down, and we had the ceilings, we blacked out the ceilings and all of the bass traps, we blacked out those. And so we changed the lighting a bit, and we got a pretty decent look to it. It was a lot of fun doing that, changing the studio into a TV studio kind of thing.
Is that a studio that anyone can rent, or is it kind of friends and family?
As long as there's one of the engineers, that's what I'm looking to do right now more, because I'm on the road. I'm on the road so much that there's various engineers. There's two or three guys that will be in there using it for video or recording, but it's not being used as much as I would like it to be used. Yeah. So anyone can rent that. Sometimes people might want to make a record and they might want me to be the guy doing it, but I'm just I'm on the road. I'm trying to focus on my I'm trying to focus on doing my thing rather than be in the studio doing other people's thing, which is fun. It's different, but I'd rather have the studio for me and then let other people do other people's stuff.
Sure. We talked about your downloads. Like, is being on the road what's mostly paying the bills these days, like the live shows?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think with any musician, it's all about having multiple streams. A little bit of downloads and videos, downloads, and CDs, of course. And, CDs are still selling, even though people don't have them in their car. I still sell CDs.
Yeah.
People still buy them. I still sign them. Mm-hmm. People want me to sign a CD, which is great. And maybe they want to take a souvenir home, and maybe they'll, dig out their CD player so they can, play it straight into their computer and have it on there.
Sure.
Because then they're going to play it on the CD player. They're probably going to,
store the data somewhere. But it has your autograph. It's like a piece. It's a souvenir.
I think that's it. T-shirts. I remember being on the road, with Tommy Emmanuel. This was a couple of years ago, and I had T-shirts that were 20 years old. I thought, they would never see the light of day again. And I remember packing my suitcase with CDs and thinking, these are going to slip around in here. I need some bubble wrap. So I put these T-shirts in there, and I think they went on the bus, or he got flown to Phoenix. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, they flew to Phoenix, and I had about 20, 30, 40 T-shirts or whatever it was, stuffed the suitcase full. And by the time they got there, I'm thinking, I wonder if these would sell. And I sold out T-shirts. I sold them all.
Wow.
T-shirts, people wanted them. And I thought, I should have been doing this for years.
Yeah. They're a pain to haul around, though. And
they
you
got
to keep inventory of how many sizes.
I know. And I was pleased. I was pleased I kept them, because they were fun. I just never had them out. But people wanted them, which is great. So, I'll get some more printed. If I get smart someday, I'll get a new design and get some more printed.
Talk to me about these. I'm fascinated by these house concerts you do. Like what is the most professionally run, like basically a venue house concert that you do? Like, walk us through the spectrum.
Oh, there's you know, obviously you, what you want as a, you know, you want to do, you know, like if you're working for yourself, your goal is for, well, first of all, that you're doing something that's fun.
Sure.
You know, that's, you've got to do something you enjoy. Your second goal is to make as much money as you can.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I hate to say that, it's just, it's a, you know, everyone wants to do well. So you want, you know, in a house concert, you want as many people showing up as you can get. So yeah, you want it well promoted, people see you and it just kind of boosts you. But I've done, you know, people's living rooms to, some people will have a house concert could be somebody's barn out the back.
Sure.
That might hold 100 people, 120, 150 people, and there's a stage. It's like, it's a venue bigger than a lot of venues that you play. So sure, it could be, a house concert could be, yeah, anything from 150 seat barn to someone's living room to, as a friend of mine in Floyd's Knobs, Indiana, you go through the neighborhood, they're all brick houses, nice, you know, nice neighborhood, brick houses, and you wouldn't know it, but to go down into his basement, he's fitted this place. It's like a nightclub down there. It's got a major stage. He's got all the lights. There's a huge bar. I mean, it's a bar and a stage, and it's a venue. It is a, and I've had that. It has been a couple of places like that where you go to someone's house, and then you go down the stairs or into some other area, and it's like they've really tricked it out like a nightclub.
Yeah.
Some of them are like that. And
Take a cut of the tickets? How does that work?
They might. Okay. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but they want their, they're doing it for the fun. But they want their expenses covered.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, sometimes not. It just depends why they're doing it. But, you know, I'm a handshake guy, so I know it's always going to be fun and everyone's going to be happy at the end of the day. So, yeah. And it's just knowing people and, some of them will be backyard concerts.
Sure.
All kinds. And I mean, I'm grateful for every one of them. I get to play what I love to play. I've never really thought, it's not, you know, with most companies, I think it's about, oh, what do people want? We'll make that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's with commercial music. It's like, oh, this is where the market is. We'll make this. Whereas, you know, with jazz or bluegrass or classical music or whatever, most of those musicians are playing what they love, and they're trying to promote what they do,
yeah,
to whoever happens to like it. Yeah. And it's very different from commercial music, which is you're making music for the biggest market,
yeah,
whereas I'm playing music I love and I want to try and attract as many people to like what I'm doing rather than me make music for a bigger market.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the main differences. So I'm glad that there are places out there for that, you know, whether it's a house concert or a festival or a music shop, a lot of music shops will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Some theaters. It's just about keeping your calendar full and mm-hmm. playing as well as you can any given gig.
What's your sense on these house concerts of like how many people had already been following you and were looking forward to the Richard Smith gig in Seattle when it comes up next year versus people who just discovered you because they follow the house concert promoter?
That is very difficult to know.
Yeah.
That is a difficult thing to know. Usually what happens is, certainly today, a house concert follower will send video of you to their mailing list.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like, it's no different from a record company who has a following, or, you know, they've got their mailing list and they want you to listen to this artist. You're like on the YouTube side chain, or you're, you know, on the Spotify side chain. You know, artists you might also like. That's difficult to know, but maybe 50-50. I don't know. It's difficult. Difficult to know, but of course, once you go back, hopefully you have a lot of the same people that saw you last time that enjoyed you, and now, you know, you kind of, you build your own following through other people's followings. I mean, I guess that's kind of how it's done. You build it yourself, and but yeah, difficult to tell.
Yeah. But you rented a car in Northern California. Is that right?
Actually, no. I drove my own car.
You drove your own car?
I drove my own car.
So you're just doing the whole country?
I actually, this particular trip, see, last December, this year, I was in Florida at the beginning of the year. I did about a week or 10 days in Nashville. Then I left and I did a couple of gigs in Arkansas. Then I did a gig in Fort Collins, Colorado, for my friend Mike Harrington. Mike and Pam Harrington, who run the, I'm wearing the t-shirt here, Rocky Mountain Guitar Camp.
Okay.
Which is always the first week of August, first, second week, depends on when the weekend is. But I'll be doing that this year. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a blast. It's myself, Jim Nichols, Pat Bergeson, John Knowles, Brooks Robertson, and David Hamburger. We're all there teaching this year. That'll be great.
Okay.
So I did a concert for Mike and Pam. Then my next, then I went through Vegas. It was 12 hours to Vegas.
Okay.
I stayed at the Link Hotel, LINQ. I would never do that again. You know, I'm kind of done with the casino parking and like 20 minutes to your room.
Okay.
Having to check in at registration. I'm thinking, I just need a bed. Yeah. I want to be able to, I like a motel where I can just rock up, park outside of the door.
Sure.
Load my stuff in and go to sleep and then get out. I mean, the casinos sound like a lot of fun, and they are, but if you're just staying for the night, well, not looking to have
or
fun.
Or if you're lugging a guitar too. Right. Yeah.
Well, and I had to leave. I left a bunch of stuff in the car as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so I wasn't going to make that journey, that trip twice and go all the way down.
Okay.
Anyway, but it's fun. Vegas is always fun for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I did Vegas, and then the next day I picked up Yosho Stefan. You may be familiar with Yosho, fantastic gypsy jazz guitar player from Germany. And we've got a trio, myself and Yosho Stefan and Rory Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
Rory's fantastic multi-instrumentalist, plays everything. Phenomenal guitar player, keyboard, saxophone, clarinet, accordion, banjo, mandolin, everything.
Yeah.
And he's just great. He'd be a great addition to any band because he plays so many instruments in every style you can think of. He's just a brilliant musician. But we've got a guitar trio together, myself, Rory, and Yosho. So we did about 3 weekends together all around California, Southern and North and Bay Area. Put those together. Some, you know, theaters, house concerts, all kinds of stuff. Did that. And then I guess the last gig was just outside of Vegas.
Okay.
And then I drove through Death Valley, which I love. It's one of my favorite places.
Yeah.
And did a few other gigs. I played at the Musicians Institute. I did like a concert stroke workshop there.
Okay.
And a few other gigs. And I came. Then I drove up to the Northwest.
Yeah.
Check out St. Helens and Rainier. Love it. I mean, I love that. I try and mix business with pleasure.
I noticed that. Yeah. You kind of have this like travelogue going on your social media. Do you kind of need to do that to stay sane? Because you have been on the road for so long. Do you need to go like, oh, I'm going to pass, I got to stop at this national park while I'm driving on this 6-hour ride or whatever?
I didn't used to. It used to be all about the gig. Now I'm thinking, hang on, this is my life. And I just started to get in. There's a lot of musicians, not all of them. I kind of did a little bit of asked a few questions about that on social media, but I think a lot of musicians, if they're playing in a band or they're playing in a touring, you know, nationally touring band, they're either in the bus or in the hotel or in the theater.
Sure.
And that's it. They don't, you know, it's like we played Albuquerque last night. We played Seattle. It's like, well, did you see or do anything?
No.
It's like, no.
Yeah.
And I just think you got to try to, if you can, if you've got time. And I like to try and make time. I mean, I love, and I've enjoyed that over the last few years more than ever.
Yeah.
Just seeing different stuff. I love Death Valley. I drove out to Rainier. went up to Paradise. It was a foggy day, unfortunately. So you're on the mountain, but you can't see the mountain.
Yeah, I've been there many times. Yeah.
Oh, it's like amazing. That. It's like, where is it? It's like you're on it, but you can't see it.
Yeah.
But you're looking for that tip, you know. St. Helens, fantastic. So, and I enjoy that as much.
Yeah.
And more than ever. Yeah, the travel blog kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's, and it's like a lot of that on social media. And if you ask a lot of musicians, hey, everybody, I'm playing on Thursday night, there's like maybe no engagement.
It's yeah.
like, well, of course you are. That's what you do. Whereas if it's like, hey, I was on Rainier yesterday, it's like, hey, that's really cool. And then, you know,
sure.
you talk about anything else
sure.
than you actually do, that's when you'll get the engagement. Maybe one video every now and then just to surprise them. Oh, here's something I actually do. But it's funny. I remember Martin Taylor telling me, he was on a program called Pebble Mill at One. A Pebble Mill was a BBC show. I think it may still be. I don't think they do it anymore. But Pebble Mill's BBC, I remember watching that as a kid. It was on for years. And Martin was on it various times. You know, Martin was, he's had a great career as a jazz guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, playing with Stefan Grappelli, had his solo career, signed with Sony for a while, had a major record label.
Yeah.
And so they had him on the TV shows, and he was on national TV, which is fantastic. And he said that he was on Pebble Mill. He said, they want you cooking. They want you doing things that you've seen that with celebrities cooking and
of
stuff.
Of course, yeah.
They
sure.
don't want you acting, which is what you actually do.
Sure.
They don't want you singing. We want to see Adele doing someone else's makeup.
Sure.
Why is that? Can you explain to me why that is? Is it because, well, I'm trying to figure out, it's because it connects with people.
Yeah.
Here's something you don't do. Here's something everybody does. Let's see somebody who's known for doing something extraordinarily well. We'll see them doing something that we can all relate to, like cooking an egg.
Sure.
And I think that's what it is. And I think that's what it is on social media.
Yeah.
People expect me to be playing or whoever it is. You know, it's like, yeah, of course you've got another gig playing your guitar. Let's
yeah.
see you cook an egg. I don't know.
Well, yeah,
I'm trying to figure it out.
Well,
myself.
I mean, I think also you've got this, you know, everyone on social media has this sort of persona that they're trying to live up to, whether it's as a dad or a musician or a cook or whatever.
Right.
And so it is interesting to be like, oh, there's more layers to this onion than he's
mean,
the fastest
right.
picker alive. Like, he actually likes the great outdoors. He actually likes whatever.
I think that's what it, yeah, maybe that's what it is. I mean, I do. I love I'd go camping, but I don't know really much about it.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of car camping, it sounds
yeah,
like.
Right. I do. Yeah. I do.
Putting
do
some miles on this thing.
But I think that is it. It's always interesting to the travel blog, because it is part of it's what
yeah.
I'm doing. It's where my life is right now. It's on the road, and I love it. And I do try and take advantage of that. But, you know, the gigs everyone knows they can come to the gig.
Mm hmm.
You know, it's those gigs, those dates are up on my website.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can always come see me play.
Yeah.
But what are you up to in between?
I see a future where you are just playing a tune on Instagram or Facebook in front of a national monument or national, like Old Faithful in the background, and you're playing the entertainer.
I've thought about this.
Yeah.
I have thought, and that will happen. But I see, because I'm on the road on my own.
Yeah,
I
you
can't
gotta prop
it.
You gotta get a little iPhone.
Yeah. This
hand,
is why I need
tripod.
My wife. Yes, yeah, so I need my wife to take the video, and we'll do that travel blog. The travel blog. I did think about what is it called? The sky loop or whatever it is. Grand Canyon.
Oh yeah.
You know, that horseshoe, the glass horseshoe.
Yes, yes, yes.
The sky, but I don't think you're allowed to do that. I don't think I would be allowed.
They won't let
any
you play
capacity.
A full tune on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're not going to let me do a gig up there. Even for one, yeah, because I think you're moving around all the time.
Yeah.
I kind of looked it up just to see if that
yeah.
might even be
yeah.
a thing. But that would certainly be a potentially viral video.
It could, yeah. You could get away with it just a mile from here in the Ballard. You know, we have locks here in Ballard. And
yeah.
The boats go up and down. Because
oh,
Puget Sound is lower than the lakes here.
Right.
And so you could be standing in the locks while the boats are rising.
Oh,
you could totally get away
I've never
with
seen
that.
That'd be interesting. You know what I tried to do last night? I tried to get a moonlit Rainier, but unfortunately the moon was behind it. So all I got was a silhouette of Rainier.
Sure.
If I had been east of Rainier,
yeah,
looking from the east, maybe I would have seen a golden top. Because I really wanted to see the snow reflecting gold.
Oh, yeah.
But I wasn't thinking of maybe in the winter when the moon is the other side. I think if that's what happens, we might be able to see a golden top Rainier. But then it's the winter, so you don't get a clear day. So what you need is a full moon on a clear day. And that's what we had last night, but the moon's over the other side. So I got, you know, those little things. That kind of stuff I would never have thought about when I was in my 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
But that stuff seems to be more important to me now.
You're stopping to smell the flowers.
Yeah, totally. That kind of stuff. Yeah. I was on a road. I did a gig for the Windlock Pickers.
Okay.
And I did a workshop in the afternoon. I did, we had some dinner and I just took a quick trip out east on the road I was on. I think it's, it was Antrim Road. It's the wind. And I think it's Avery Road, maybe, is what Marv told me. And you go east on Avery Road, and then you can see both Rainier and St. Helens in the same view.
Oh, yeah.
There's couple of times. Yeah. There's not many places you can do that, unless you're in a helicopter or something like that. But from the road, I think that was it's one of the few places you can see both mountains in the same view. And it was fantastic. I just loved it, you know, and it was a clear day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is kind of breathtaking to me. So it's one of the things I love to do while I'm on the road. Other places, Death Valley, if you've not seen it, it's otherworldly. It's spectacular. Valley of Fire State Park, where they shot Total Recall, all the Mars scenes.
Yeah.
That's just northeast of Las Vegas. I know we're supposed to be talking about music and guitar.
Do you have this affinity for the national parks east of the Mississippi as well, or are you just in love with the West?
Well, it's mostly the West. I'll tell you why. There's plenty of grass and trees in England. We didn't have a lot of red mountains in England. In fact, there's none of that. And so it reminds me of Mars or Westerns or something that we didn't have. I mean, everywhere's different, of course, you know. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of beautiful national parks. Everywhere's different, and I'd love to visit. But, you know, if you just look at the map, you look at Google Earth or you look at just the map and zoom out, and you look at the west, the west side of the Rockies, the color of the entire continent changes.
Yeah.
You can see it get red and brown, and it just, you know, it's a lot rougher terrain.
Yeah.
So that's what I get a kick out of. And so Sedona, I'll be doing a gig there on June 15th. I'll be playing in Sedona, and I'll have a couple of days to look around.
Yeah.
That'll be fantastic. On the 12th, I'll be driving all the way from Santa Cruz to Sedona. So that'll be I'll probably go through Bakersfield.
Sure.
And then I could take the 13th. I could take various. I could do Death Valley again.
You could,
but I'll do that later. I might do that in December.
What's your strategy for these? I mean, you're driving yourself. Are you listening to music? Are you listening to podcasts? Are you just contemplating life? Like, how do you survive on the road?
All of those things.
Yeah.
All of those things. Start thinking a lot and start overthinking things.
Okay.
Start coming up with ways to save the planet. And,
And are you the kind of person that takes time to eat a good meal at the little mom and pop? Or are you like, there's a Subway attached to the gas station, I'm going to eat there?
Mom and pop every time.
Okay.
I mean, every now and then, if it's midnight, it's like, okay, it'll be Chili's. Mm-hmm. Oh, it has to be Chili's. Then I go in Chili's and actually it's pretty good. Sure. I mean, it's nothing wrong with Chili's. I like their, you know, the triple appetizer dish or whatever it is, bit of everything. It's not healthy. But the mom and pop places, I love those. Traveling is, I've got to like it. You know, when you're a kid, when you're going from place to place, you're always looking to get there. But now I find the journey is just as important and just as it's great. I love particularly going through the desert because it's like a kaleidoscope of different views.
Yeah,
that's what I love about the desert and the West in particular. And some of these drives, I mean, I've got a couple of gigs in Tucson, which are, they'll be coming up end of June. And Tucson, those saguaros, they, you know, yeah, those cacti out there in the Saguaro National Desert, that you, there's a sense of reverence for those things. They don't start growing arms until they're 80 years old.
Yeah.
So it is me. I'm thinking about the licks I'm playing. I get up in the morning. I might run some exercises and tunes. I'm thinking, okay, I've got to get out, take a walk. And then you come up to one of these saguaros and they're like people. You know, they look like characters. Sure, they almost sure. look like, maybe because they've got that kind of slightly human form.
Yeah.
They look like they know you're there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a sense of reverence because they've been around for longer than I have.
Sure.
And I think, yeah, this is, I feel it's a very special place.
So a lot of musicians gripe that they're always on the road. You really are always on. When do you actually get home?
Well, I say it was 10 weeks last year. It'll probably be about the same this year. I've got to find a balance. I think I might be doing the RV thing. Here's the thing. What do I really want?
We got to wrap this up so you don't get towed, but no, I want to hear this thing. Yeah. Yeah.
The point is, what is the goal here? I mean, what is anybody's goal? Is okay, do I want to play stadiums? Mm-hmm. Do I want to do a stadium? Do I want to be playing Nissan Stadium so I can make $1 million and only have to do one gig a year and then sit on my butt for the rest of the year? No, because I would suck. Every gig would suck. If I spent more time at home and did fewer gigs, I know my fingers would not be. I've got to be playing in order to play.
Yeah.
So in order to be playing, you're on the road, and that's kind of what it is. Because even, I remember Tommy Emmanuel said this. So just when the tour's finishing and I go home and take some time off, I'm just getting warmed up. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting warmed up. I always feel I'm playing my best when I've played 5-6 gigs on the trot. And all the hinges feel like they're greased, mm-hmm. that you've played and you've played. And now, I mean, you know the difference. Maybe other people don't. I don't know. It's difficult to tell. But I certainly know the difference. If I've done 5 or 6 gigs on the trot and I'm running exercises with a metronome and I'm playing and I'm really feeling on top of it, then I'm really feeling good about my playing. So if I wasn't doing that all the time, it's just not – that's really where I get the most satisfaction, is if I've done – doesn't have to be the biggest gig with the most people. If I know I've played my as well as I think I've played, or as well as I think I can play, that's the gig that I'm looking for. It's really about, yeah, playing at my best, yeah. And thinking, oh yeah, I nailed this one, I nailed that. But I've never done the perfect gig where I've thought I nailed everything. There's always some issue. I mean, you're always reaching for the stars, you know,
sure.
looking for. Or even if you nailed something, you think, well, how can I make it better? How can I make it? So there's that. But yeah, the goal is, how much time do I spend at home? If I'm at home, what am I doing?
Yeah,
I could be in the studio maybe, being creative in there, maybe get another record out. But yeah, I couldn't do – if I slowed down, my gigs wouldn't be as good because I wouldn't be – playing as much.
Yeah.
So, and if you're on the road playing all the time, then what do you really need? You just need a car that works.
Yeah.
And a decent place to stay.
Yeah.
And you know, I get to go to the mum and pop places and I get to see Mount Rainier and stuff. So it's good. Right. So yeah, I don't know what the goal is. I mean, all the goal could be, let me play stadiums.
Yeah,
if this was a possibility, you know, uh-huh. I could play stadiums for the next 2 years and then never work again. So now I'm, you know, but that's not why I do what I do. I don't. Sure. I guess yeah. I'd be interested to hear other people's perspectives on that. I mean, because I've got a theory, Jason, which is bands that stay together can make a decent living, but still have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, the Rolling Stones, I wouldn't say they're a working band. They're just a group of guys that they're still gigging, but once every 5 years,
sure,
and maybe for a month or two. So they're not a band. They're a group of guys
they're a brand that comes out every, but they're not, you know, like somebody like Diamond Rio, for example. Those guys had hits. They're doing great. They're still together. And they, first of all, they got to get on. They got to get, you got to get on with your band members. You've got to, you got to be able to make a decent living. Otherwise you leave. Or if you've made too good of a living, one of you is probably going to say, well, you know what? I don't need the road anymore. I've got to go.
Yeah.
So I think there's a, that's my little theory anyway. I guess it's going to be different for every, for different people. But I think, yeah, if you still need to make a living, there's got to be something that's making you still work. You got to have that drive. And it, maybe for those guys, it's the music. If you still love the music, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
But I think if you're a working band or a working musician, you got to love the music, but you still got to, you can play the music at home. You can do, like Les Paul.
Yeah.
He did, you know, he didn't need to do those gigs. He played Fat Tuesdays and he played the Iridium for years. I'm sure that kept him alive for another 10 years. He didn't need to do that, but he loved it because he felt he had to do that every Monday. He felt a purpose every Monday. And I'm sure that kept him going because he loved the music. But that's a little bit different from needing the work, which I'm sure a lot of people are in that position as well. So, yeah, different reasons. But, yeah, I mean, I couldn't quit. I couldn't quit work. Even if I could afford to quit working, I'd get itchy feet. I'd be thinking, oh, what am I doing? What is the purpose of my life, you know? So, yeah, I'd be interested to hear various people's – I was talking to Yosho about this, about, you know, various people's perspectives on, you know, would you still be out gigging if you didn't have to?
Yeah, yeah.
And I would have to. I couldn't just shut down. So, but you know, I'm 51 now. That's this state.
Yeah.
Maybe in 20 years it'll be different. I don't know.
You are allowed to change your mind.
You are.
It's the beauty of being a human. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. It's. But you know, there are certain guys out there. I see them out playing. It's like they love doing it. And it's, that's. I'm still trying to do the gig. I'm still trying to do the gig that I think every take is a take. Every song was a take if it was an album. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do is, yeah, I'd be happy with that if it was an album, you know, all the way through, a whole live, you know, 2 hours of perfection. That's what I'm aiming for. I've never reached it yet. But that's the goal. And at least for me.
I love it. Well, I know you got to get going. I'm going to include a link to your tour dates in the show notes because obviously you're going to be covering a lot of America over the next month or two.
Yeah, no, let me see. I think it's updated to July, the end of July, where I'm going to be in North Carolina. So I've got to get up. And then, yeah, August I'll be all over. August I'm doing the Martin Taylor's camp at the Full Moon Resort.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the month I'm doing at the beginning of the month, I'm in Colorado, and then I'm playing Floyd's Knobs at that a place that I, Jelly's Jam Room. John Dennison, Jelly's Jam Room. John, if you're listening, hey, man, I'm looking forward to it. I think that's the 18th of August. Then the 19th, I think these are the dates. Yeah, the 19th, I'm in Front Porch Music.
Okay.
Up in Valparaiso, and then I'm in... I'm remembering this because I look at my calendar so often. Yeah, August 20th, I'm up in Detroit a couple of days. Then I go to Canada for a couple of days, got a couple of concerts there.
Okay.
Across, and then I go down to Keuka Lake. I've got a gig there, Keuka Lake. And then I'm playing in Kingston, New York. A couple of gigs. Put them all together. Then I'm doing Martin's camp. Then I'm up in New Hampshire. Then I'm all over the place, gig after gig.
All right.
I won't get to do a lot of sightseeing during that. That's going to be pure work, driving.
Okay.
But there'll be a little bit of it. But yeah, I'm always looking forward to doing the gigs. How good's this one going to be? Got to get a new album out. Going from gig to gig. Doing a lot of sightseeing, driving for 10 hours thinking, what is my purpose? Do you know what I mean?
It's yeah, like, yeah, I do.
When I'm driving, your hours driving, your mind goes wandering, especially after coffee as strong as this.
Yeah,
that's why I've been like my mouth is a waterfall. It's not stopping. Sorry, Jason.
I love it.
Caffeine fuel. I always like this in the morning.
Folks should follow you because it's like you get the guitar coverage and the travel log coverage in one, and
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I mean, I probably should be spending more time at home, but then I hate to slow down because I feel I'm going to seize up. So yeah, it's finding that balance, but it is a lot of fun. I mean, I'm up here. I'll get another look at Rainier and St. Helens.
Yeah,
I'll go through Death Valley again. All of those places, Joshua Tree.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gig there in Joshua Tree.
Oh, cool.
I haven't got it yet. It is Pappy and Harriet's.
Oh, yeah. That's a legendary place.
Major place.
Yeah.
And McCartney played there.
Yeah.
In between the two old fella Coachellas.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. He played there just to stay warmed up, I guess.
Well, you know who else is over there is the guitar builder T.K. Smith.
He's
over
yeah.
there. You should
sure,
go visit
yeah,
him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Play some Fantastic. Travis tunes. Yeah.
Love it. I've got to go over there.
All right.
There's so much to see out there on the road. So I'm looking to see everything and have a gig there, be able to work 365 and then not. So and that's my goal. I didn't know what my goal was when I first started out, but it's a lot of fun. Seeing a lot of stuff, meet a lot of people. Kind of like it's the gypsy lifestyle. Willie Nelson's been doing it for years, just on a big bus.
Thanks, Richard.
I appreciate it, Here. Jason. Thanks, man.
Okay, that was my conversation with Richard Smith. That is what the Fretboard Journal is all about, sharing stories that you're not going to find anywhere else. We heard a lot of them. Follow Richard, please, on Instagram and Facebook. See where he's at right now. I'm glad that I got this podcast out so that you could hear all those August tour dates. And I can't thank you enough for listening to the Fretboard Journal podcast and for supporting us on Patreon now. It means the world to me. It's not easy doing all of this content. And I really, truly appreciate all of your support, all of your kind letters to podcast@fretboardjournal.com, all those great reviews you've posted on Apple Podcasts. Keep them coming. Till next time.